This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. So here we are, part two, after show. Not as scripted and planned and more off the cuff. How was the conversation from your side?
Great. Yeah, no, it's, you know, there's all these things that we know we've done or that we've thought about or that we, you know, that we think about. But when you start saying them out loud, they become real. So it's great. I love it. Thank you for having me think through, especially what it would be like to start over. I can't fathom it, but if I had to, it's good to know that at least I have thought that I may have a plan.
You have a plan, and what's interesting about that question too is how much emphasis people put on different parts of it, right? Like, which is, you know, starting over. You know, life is full of seasons, right? And very rarely do we enter into one thing for the rest of our lives. So it's a season here and a season here, and careers are full of that. And, you know, I think that's interesting when you think of, like, starting over, not really starting over, right? Especially if you've done it. Sure. It's like, all right, what's that plan? And I think it's fun and interesting to hear you talk about that, like, you know, the opportunity to think about these things and say them out loud. I know that's one of the benefits I've had from having a podcast and also being on lots of podcasts is just sharing that and kind of voicing it, the things that I knew, or sometimes people like you and I, we've been around long enough, the things that we forgot that we knew and forgot that we did, that, or it's autopilot and we don't even think about it. And then you're like, oh, I guess that is what I do, right? And then putting that into some context.
Yeah, no, it's great to, how can I put it, to be accountable to your own words, right? So that it's, I have to do more of these. Definitely have to do more podcasts. Yeah.
Well, and so for everyone listening, I'm going to let everybody in on a secret. If you made it to part two, I didn't want to mention it in part one and kind of skew people's opinions and thoughts, but this is your first time on a podcast. You've done webinars, you've done seminars, you've probably spoken on stage before. We've talked about different experiences you've had, but the first time actually on a podcast. And webinars are different because, you know, there's slides or there's a structure. Podcast, there's a structure, but you also never know what's going to happen. I think you did great. I think it was a great flow. I've interviewed enough people, especially who don't have podcast experience, and sometimes it's okay, but it's not great. You know your stuff, and I thought all the content you shared was great. And of course, we ran out of time. Like, literally, it would have been a one and a half hour show if we covered everything I was curious about. But you did great. How did it feel on your first podcast from your side?
No, I really appreciate it. You're entirely right. You know, I'm used to either being interviewed or being on stage where it's just a monologue, and webinars where it's just a monologue. This is awesome. I've listened to a few podcasts. Had always been interested in how do they get people to open up, and now it makes sense.
And now you know.
Now I know.
So one thing, now you know. One of the things that you mentioned that just jumped out to me, you were talking about kind of the successes that you've had with building a scalable team. One of the parts that you mentioned, which it was interesting because it wasn't what I was thinking so much where you would go with it, but you mentioned basically internal alignment, having other departments, other leaders within the organization also on board so that everyone's kind of, I'm going to guess, rowing in the same direction or supporting what you're doing instead of battling. It's interesting that you say that or put that under the category of building that scalable, successful operation, in, you know, not just a process or a CRM. Because I think that's so valuable. The thing that I see all the time is this silo where it's sales. It's usually sales versus everybody within the organization. And how have you managed to either create that, or what's different about Lending USA where there's not that silos, where it's this internal alignment?
You know, we fight for priorities. That's for sure. And we look at everybody's bandwidth. and make decisions based on it. So I can't say it's perfect, but we're very close. And to the point that I will go, here's a prime example. I'd had to fly to a beautiful area of Ohio to go meet with one of our top clients. Off the beaten path, had to fly into an airport, take a car, drive a few hours. And the CFO and our chief risk officer came out to meet me there. This is a sales meeting. It's not even a sales meeting because they're already our client. This is our, it's relationship building.
Okay.
They knew it was important. I asked them, any chance you can come join me, even though it's going to be several hours driving for each one of you. They came, they loved it. They built a relationship with the team at our client's office. And we walked out after, I think it was what was supposed to be an hour, it was 5 hours of just sharing stories and touring their offices and having lunch together, and where they felt connected to our clients. Our clients felt connected to our executive leadership team, and not just the revenue provoking team, but the larger, broader part of the organization. Before the pandemic, so this would have been 2018, 2019, we used to do a lot of site visits, right? We would go and visit our clients, especially in the LA area, but all over. And at that time, we started saying, you're not going to visit a client as a relationship manager with another relationship manager. That's silly. Why are we sending two people? But we understand that you don't want to go alone and you want to show that you care about the client by having a bigger team. So take somebody from a different department. And it has to be somebody from anything. And not just, marketing travels a lot with us to go and meet clients, to go to trade shows and stuff. Yeah. So it can't just be marketing. It has to be fraud. It has to be consumer verification. It has to be customer service. It has to be our engineers. Our developers, it takes somebody from accounting, it doesn't matter, somebody from any other part of the organization. And that was awesome. They would come back to the office, back when we were still in office, they would come back to the office sharing all these stories and how they would take pictures with them, and they would had lunch, and now they had new friends, and they were liking each other, or connecting on LinkedIn. And now all of a sudden you have somebody whose job is to determine whether we were going to approve somebody for a loan or not based on a discrepancy in their address, into an advocate for this merchant. Even though they have there's no commission, you can't monetarily incentivize somebody to either prevent or execute on fraud because you create the wrong environment. But they all became advocates for the merchant. So now it's protecting the merchant as opposed to stopping fraud. And that has been something that we've kept very close to our hearts. Manoj, our CTO, and I talk to a lot of merchants together when we're talking about technology solutions, and I like to bring him in close, early on in the conversation so that he's close to them. Our project managers, our business analysts, our engineers, we try to, I make it a point to try to integrate as many people into the sales process as possible that are not in sales. In every other organization I've ever been in, there's always that fear. And even here at the beginning, there was always that fear of, ooh, do I really want somebody from finance talking to the client? What if they say the wrong thing? Or what if they're not as polished? No, everybody in the organization needs to sell. Everybody in the organization needs to know what we're selling, how we're selling it, why we're selling it, and have the ability to connect with the clients. Even if it's nothing more than just a hello, being there, it's huge. Then we get to tell the client, look, yeah, we have our senior infrastructure engineer in the call. But not just somebody that's going to take notes and give it to that person.
Right.
And that's been huge. I think I'm very lucky that A, the team that we have has been great about it, but B, that Camilo, our CEO, is super on board with it. And I think he and I attend trade shows and we take clients out. Like, he's not just a figurehead. He gets there in the trenches, and that pushes the whole executive team. Even our board members, our board is great. They're constantly talking to clients on our behalf or with us. They love jumping on calls. I think everybody loves, secretly, everybody loves the thrill of getting a deal done. Everybody loves the thrill of showing growth. Everybody loves to hear that we build something good and that the system works. Everybody loves that. So why keep that euphoric moment just for the sales team and the revenue team? I frankly feel like that's why it's sales versus everybody else, because sales is animated. They get to get all of the good prices, and then they get to tell everyone else, well, the system is down, so it's your fault. Why would I need the system to work? I need this client to be happy. I need finance to pay these people. Like, why is this not happening? But if you're not sharing in the success with everyone else, well, of course that creates friction. But if everyone else gets to see it firsthand and feel it firsthand and hear it firsthand from the clients, it changes the dynamic, drastically.
I love it. I've never heard an example like that of, why that internal alignment, or how to make that happen, avoiding the silo nature within organizations. But to think of the requirement being a relationship manager, whoever that is, taking someone who's not sales or marketing related with them, how many benefits that is. Obviously, this has to come from the top down. So like you said, from the CEO who's saying, this is the culture I want to have internally, this is what I want for my customers, and then for everybody, because that person from accounting or that person from customer service, they're dealing with what they're dealing with, but to actually meet a client and hear them and build a relationship, now they feel like, A, they're a part of something, and they get to know that client in particular, and then they see everything different, and they realize their role is more than just that job, right? Or that job title or that task. It's a part of something even bigger where you get to see that, right? Like, as you're talking, I'm thinking of the value and benefit of foreign exchange programs, where it's like you have this thought about this whole country based on what you see on the news, and then you meet someone from that country and you're just like, wait, you're totally different than what I thought. And like, now you have a relationship and now you have an appreciation, respect for that country because you meet someone from there. Like, that's literally what you're doing internally.
Absolutely. I had never thought about that parallel, but it makes absolute sense. I lived in in Japan for 2 years, and now in the US. I've lived in different countries, and you're absolutely right. There's nothing quite like immersing yourself in somebody else's culture, and that's, I think that's the difference between transactional sales and relationship sales. I'm fully confident that our team, we've not had the best product for many years. We've had our ups and downs, like every company, in terms of service.
Sure.
And it's because of those relationships that our team has built from the top down, from what our chief marketing officer puts out in press releases, to what our anybody in the organization brings out of the organization, to the day-to-day conversations with the relationship management team and the customer service team, and it's that relationship that has kept them doing business with Learning USA.
I love it. I know technically we're out of time as far as our time block goes. Do you have a couple more minutes? Because there's one more question I want to ask you, if you can.
Sure. I have to jump, but yes.
Okay.
One more.
you made a transition, and people can look this up on LinkedIn and they can definitely reach out to you. But one of the most fascinating things is you went from luxury goods into basically lending merchant services and support, right? After a long career in dealing with luxury goods and, you know, the Neiman Marcuses and all the, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Why that transition, and like, how was that transition? You know, obviously as quickly as you could cover that, because I'm super curious at how that happened.
It's interesting. So the real transition in my career, I would say, was less from one industry to another. It was from I used to work for the world's largest luxury good conglomerate, for LVMH, and then I went to work for a 3-person startup, starting from zero. And what I fell in love with was startups. I love small companies. I love having to compete with the large brands. I love having to get creative from a sales perspective on how do you get to the customer first, right? And now I went from being with the company that had all the billboards and all of the shelf space in all of the department stores to now having to get creative. And if somebody's going to go to the department store when they're on a business trip to buy something, why don't we put it in the lobby shop of their 5-star hotel? Or why don't we try to, you know, so that was the biggest transition. Then from there, after working with hundreds and thousands of locations, I met our CEO. I knew our, at the time, vice chairman of the board. And the opportunities were endless with the fintech space. I thought it was a great idea to take what I had learned of dealing with points of sale, what I had learned of dealing with people, with sales to those type of organizations, and now become a solution provider as opposed to a product vendor, and apply it to finance and see if it could work, right? And it has. It was, there's very little difference between a financial product and a good, but it's a good it's a good difference, and I love it. I fell in love with fintech since we started, and figuring out how to make it better, how to make it bigger, and I don't look back. I do miss the Harrods and Neiman Marcus parties. Those were pretty exotic, the Grand Prix and stuff like that. But we now get to work with a greater market. We now also get to work in the debt settlement space. So we work with underbanked and people trying to get ahead, and it's really rewarding.
I love it. I think that's great. And I can appreciate all that. And definitely going from a physical good to a service is always a tougher transition because it's not this tangible thing. But obviously what you're helping people with is helping them achieve some goal or get some tangible thing or pay for something that they've got. So I appreciate that. Again, David, thanks for being on here. Great job on your first podcast. So much good value for people who want to connect with you. Again, if you didn't catch the first part, david@lendingusa.com, or find David Ruta on LinkedIn. Again, David, thanks for being here and talking about sales and leadership.
Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate it. I hope I get invited and for another one day.
We will have to, because there's so many more questions, so many more things I wanted. We'll definitely do a part two. And for everyone watching and listening, make sure to check out part one that I mentioned of our conversation, where there's so many good nuggets and information in there. And until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.